if you're not actually bought in and you're not actually demonstrating that to the entire organization and you're not building into your strategic conversation, I think a lot of organizations will hire the data scientist who's going to be responsible for dealing with the data problem. Or they're going to hire the innovation champion that's responsible for making innovation happen in the organization. In a lot of cases, they fail, even if they have a small little team, because they are bucking up against, you know, the culture of the rest of the organization. It's not super clear how they're meant to influence or fit in. The senior leadership's not necessarily paying attention day to day. And so, you know, making sure that you are really thinking about how do we, if we're going to be more innovative, if we're going to encourage change, how does that actually flow down from the leadership?
Welcome, fellow entrepreneurs and goal getters, to Entrepreneurial Elevation, Unleashing Greatness Within, with myself, your host, Kelly Beveridge, and my guest today, Kendra McDonald. She is originally from Ottawa, yet she lives in Alliston, Ontario. And I was just sharing with her, I'm super excited to have her on the podcast because she's so smart. What she does is very unique, and I'm just really excited to learn from her. I'm going to share her accolades because it's important to do this. So she is the CEO of Canada's Ocean Supercluster. She leads a national cluster accelerating ocean innovation and positioning Canada as a global leader in the sustainable blue economy. Just so cool. Under her leadership of Ocean Supercluster, she supported over 100 projects, contributed to thousands of jobs, helped launch almost 200 companies, and fostered collaboration across regions. So she knows what she's talking about, and I'm just really excited to talk to her. Just to give her share a few of her accolades, she, in 5 years in a row, she's been named one of Atlantic Canada's top 50 CEOs. She's one of Canada's top sustainability leaders. She's committed to community and sits on multiple boards. And recently, which I love, she went back to school and got her STEM degree and master's in technology management. And we're going to be talking today about awareness in technology, thinking innovatively and evolving and empowering women in tech. And we might have to have you back, Kendra, and talk about time management and priority management, because I don't know how you do everything that you do. That'll have to be a whole new episode in itself. Yet just so grateful you're here today. Thanks for being on the episode.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. And so, you know what? I would love to start with this, because your current role is incredibly impactful and transformative. And I think you're such a leader. Yeah. I want to take it back. How did you end up getting into this space where you're leading such transformative work in ocean economy? Because I don't feel like, did you start out wanting to do that? That doesn't seem like a natural path. So I'm just curious how you ended up where you are.
Sure. Actually, back in high school, so two things. One, I really loved math. Two, I was really quiet. So I was an introvert and just a quiet, hardworking introvert that loved math. And so when I looked at what I wanted to be, and it's funny, as you reflect back, you realize my dad was studying accounting at the time. He was working with government in internal audit. And so I ended up down the path of my dad without realizing it. And decided to do a commerce degree and then to do accounting because I loved math. Now, by the time I figured out accounting and math were not exactly the same thing, there was a lot more theory maybe than math and accounting. I was well down the path and I had applied to become a co-op student. And again, and maybe this was a good thing, I didn't really realize what I was signing up for. So here I thought I would be in a room doing accounting. And it turned out that the job is, when you're an auditor, is all about going to client sites, meeting new people, having lots of conversations, all the things that actually as an introvert, I didn't actually enjoy very much. So that was a bit of a culture shock. But then it turned out that I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the variety. I enjoyed getting to know new companies. And so I continued down the path of becoming a CPA. And worked with one of the big accounting firms, and so did that. And then I had the opportunity to work with telecommunications companies. And so I really enjoyed telecommunications because I understood the purpose. So when you think about technology companies, what is the problem you're trying to solve? For telecommunications, the technology kept changing, certainly over the 25 years, I was working with various companies. But the purpose of getting communications from point A to point B was the same, whether you did it via a satellite or a submarine cable or the wires that we see, like all of the infrastructure. The purpose was really so that you could pick up the phone and eventually you could text and it would get received on the other side. So I found that really interesting. And with that, I had the opportunity to take that telecom experience and work in Australia for a few years and work in Hong Kong for 8 to 9 months. And then I came back to Montreal and continued in the telecom space. And what I found was while I didn't love the accounting, I found that process that created the numbers really interesting. So how did my telecom example, how did I capture that call and then eventually bill it to a customer? Because there was a whole bunch of technology that made that happen. And that's what I found interesting. And so coincidentally, there was Sarbanes-Oxley happened in the early, dating myself now, early 2000s, but that was a really big deal. And that forced a lot more attention on process. And so I spent a lot of time in that space. And then I had the opportunity when I became a partner in 2006 to lead in Atlantic Canada. And so I moved out to St. John's. I'm actually based in St. John's, Newfoundland. I was born in Elliston, Ontario, actually. Oh, okay. I'm currently in St. John's, Newfoundland. And so then I joined what was Deloitte's Innovation Council. So what was interesting again, so 10 years ago, Deloitte did a study. And what they found is Canada was particularly susceptible to lack of innovation because we were not sufficiently investing in technology. And I was adopting my daughter at the time, and I became really probably much more interested in her future and the future of the country. And so this whole lack of investment in innovation and lack of productivity and a lot of the themes actually we're hearing still today, which is too bad, but became much more higher on my agenda. And I got involved with the Newfoundland Labrador Technology Industry Association, which is now called TechNL. I became the chair of that, again, pushing technology in the province with the Innovation Council, pushing technology with my clients. And then someone said to me, if you really care about Canada and you really care about the region and you really care about technology, you should be doing this. And that was the creation of what is now the Global Innovation Cluster, but Canada's Ocean Supercluster. And they were looking for their full-time CEO. And I was aware of the initiative and what it was meant to do. I was not ocean by background. I had not worked much with ocean companies at all. And so I spent a lot of time researching, what the economic opportunity was, researching Canada's positioning, really understanding that this was a big, really technology project. So we've brought tech into media or financial services or pick your sector. We've seen technology, health, and this was bringing technology into the ocean. And so I had the technology understanding and got really interested in the real opportunity for Canada. And anyway, and so here I am. So,
Oh my gosh, I love your story. And, you know, I'm listening to you speak and you make it sound so simple, your path. And I'm sure it wasn't as easy as it sounds. And as you climbed the ranks and found your way and worked your way into partnerships and then chair and then CEO and kept making these decisions, right, to shift to what was more in alignment with what you cared about, which I think is so, I love hearing people's career paths, right? And so I'm curious, as the people who are listening who are founders or CEOs themselves or leaders of some kind, what would you say in your journey, before we get into like tech and all of that stuff, I'm just curious what you would say within your journey were some of the like mindset and belief shifts that you had to step into as you filled bigger leadership roles, you know, year after year?
Yeah, the first one was whether I wanted to work with people or not. And So as an introvert, this actually was a really big decision. So my idea of accounting, when I first got into it, was I was going to sit in a room and you picture the old pictures of bookkeepers. I had the stacks and stacks of paper and I was going to hide with the papers and I was going to do all the numbers and really not talk to people much at all. This shift to a career, which was going to be all about meeting new people, I still to this day don't like calling to make a hair appointment or to order a pizza. I love email. Email was a gift to me to be able to actually send messages and not necessarily talk to people. And so that was step one, is to be good and to be effective at this career that I was embarking on. I had to be really comfortable around people. And even with my very first interview, I remember the interviewer was behind me and said, okay, you sit there and I'll sit here. And when someone's behind you, you don't know where here and there are. And so I sat down and I realized I was in the wrong seat because he had to reach over me and grab his paper. And I was like, oh no, I've already screwed up this interview. And it was the most relaxed interview that I had. And it was the job that I got because I assumed I'd already lost the job. And he was asking me about my piano and didn't care about my accounting. And so I thought, okay, I'm done. But it was a very good lesson in, I was much more relaxed, connected with the individual. My true personality could come out, buried underneath the shyness and the complexity of being an introvert. That was step one. As I went through my career, and especially when this role came along, another big moment was I realized, because I had never actually applied for a job, I was a co-op student and then was the same organization for almost 25 years. All of a sudden, I had to write a CV. And I realized what I really enjoyed was building things. So I had gone to Australia and helped build that practice. I then went to Hong Kong and helped them establish a team to do a particular thing. I then came back to Canada and was working on this new area of development. And then I became the chief audit executive for Deloitte Global, which was a new role. And so when this role came along that felt so intimidating when I started, I realized, hey, this is actually a very natural progression because I am building a new thing. The other one was around when you do build a new thing, usually you have critics as much as you have supporters, right? Because, and I think that is true for anyone that's trying to build a new business, right? You're really out on a limb. And so you have to figure out how comfortable you are with that. So how do you find your supporters? How do you make sure that you don't feel constantly criticized? I think as women too, because we naturally trend towards imposter syndrome and then people start criticizing your idea, like we take it on very personally. And I'm not going to say I am perfect at it. I'm not perfect at it. But I think you really have to get into that comfort of the discomfort of people not buying in and everyone having an opinion on how foolish, silly, unreasonable, unlikely your idea is. And then what's really exciting is when you prove that it is none of those things and you get your supporters and you're able to continue on. But those are up there probably.
No, those are that's so good. Those are such great examples. And I love that you're an example for introverts, because I think that a lot of introverts might, their mindset might be like, I can't do that. Do you know that's too uncomfortable? And so I think when you shared, it's actually a big deal for introverts to put themselves into a people-oriented position. That's a massive growth right there to even be willing to do that and to weigh that out. So you're such a great example that you can have the role you have and still protect your space. And I like that you shared about building things. So finding out what you actually like to do, what you're good at, and continue to find roles that match that. And what you just shared is so true. When you're willing to step out into the unknown and do something, you will have supporters, yet you do want to expect you're going to have critics. You know, you will, especially when you're being a trailblazer or moving into spaces that are where the innovators are. We're talking about innovation and technology too, which is what you're doing now. So I'm sure you've faced a lot of critics. And so I'm curious, was there ever a time where you're in this space of technology and innovation and leadership? How do you navigate that with your own self-doubt possibly creeping in, especially when you went into this space and it wasn't something that you had done for years and you're the one leading the charge?
Yeah, so I did get some very good advice from someone who said, focus on the unique perspective that you bring to the room. So rather than focusing on, I don't know ocean, I don't know ocean science, I don't know about whales, I don't know about water, I don't know about harsh environments, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. I really focused on what do I bring? So I bring technology. I bring my background as accounting and financial risk management. And so this is a government program, right? And so we do have to operate. We're innovating within a frame. And so it was really a lot of, because I think as you get more and more senior, it is, and this is something that they don't teach well in school, is that it is less about your technical competency. So the more that you move along, your technical competency becomes less and less relevant to your success, which is why you've got so many different books on soft skills and negotiation skills and conflict resolution and how to manage people. And because these are so many of the things that I think we're getting better in the schools at trying to train people, but those are really the things, your level of input, your ability to get followership. Like these are all things that are soft skills. And it is really trying to recognize that you're not going to have a technical competency and you need to be able to use all of those other things. And all of those other things carry from one role to the next. One of the things that I will say, again, being the introvert, my natural tendency when I am stressed out is to put my head down and not talk to anyone and just get things done. And so that, to this day, I have to check that and say, actually, I need to do the opposite of that. I need to communicate more, talk about what's going on, create the transparency, have the conversation, get the input, have everyone feel like they're part of the solution, because you can just very quickly become disconnected. Put a question in there somewhere, hopefully.
Yeah, no, you did. I love it. And it's like really just focus on what you bring to the table. And I'm curious, because if we move this into speaking about why it's so important nowadays for women to be open to being curious about technology and innovation and stepping into those roles, piggybacking what I just asked you, but more for giving advice to other women who are curious about tech and innovation, but maybe feel intimidated, right? Because they might feel like, do I even belong in this space, right? So what advice would you have for those women?
Yeah, so I just read another article this week in the Financial Times that talked about the fact that I think men are in the same role using ChatGPT at 20% more than women to be able to do their role. I read another stat where women, jobs predominantly done by women, are more likely to be automated than men in terms of percentages. And so this is something that worries me. I have a daughter. It's just this natural tendency away from technology or less use of technology for women. And I think as we look at all of the different sectors of the economy, technology is going to be critical to all of them. So part of it is experimenting. And I don't know, this is my personal musing, but is part of it the imposter syndrome? So you don't want to, you know, you don't want to touch it and you don't want to necessarily play with it and have it not work. I remember you mentioned that I did my master's in technology management. Part of the reason I did that is when I was in school and in high school, I was in a computer coding course with all men, or all men, all boys, probably annoying boys at the time. But anyway, and so we had a project to do and they all worked together and I was by myself and I failed it. And so I wasn't used to failing things. And so I immediately said, I'm not good at this. I am going to opt out of computers and computer science and engineering and all of those things because I'm obviously just bad. And so I think that can happen, right? You have a bad experience and it just shapes your desire to go into that particular sector. And it's experimenting and trying it and seeing the power of it. Now, I did read somewhere else where it's actually tied to trust. So there's lots of worry again around AI and ethics and bias. And so what is done with your data? And so women seem to trend towards worrying more about trust with the technology than men. But we need to be there. We absolutely need women to be at the table to be able to make sure that there isn't the bias, to make sure that it's considering all of their perspectives, to make sure that they are shaping the conversations, the key conversations of the future. So the difference between women and men is not so staggering now in technology overall, but certainly in leadership in technology, there's still quite a big difference in terms of the female senior leaders and the male senior leaders for technology companies. And women tend to leave technology more and technology jobs.
Yeah. And I'm curious, because you've been in the space for a while now, what gifts do you feel, what different unique qualities do women bring to technology that, and I don't mean it to mean to make this like a men-women thing yet, I'm just curious, like, how do women contribute differently that could actually advance technology or bring benefits to the space?
Yeah, it's a pretty broad question. If you think about, let's take healthcare, for example, right? So there's been a lot of, and not a health expert, but from different presentations I've seen where a lot of the constructs around medicine have been developed by men, predominantly for men, and then applied to women. And I think we are getting better and better at more women's health issues, but I think you will have a mindset of thinking more about the uniqueness of women. And I think that's, there's more broadly than just gender. There's lots of other considerations, but I think that is part of the perspective that women bring. And you can carry that through to whether it's customer service, whether it's media and how that resonates, whether it is, anything. I think from an ocean perspective, where we see it is that now with remote. So now I put an autonomous vessel on the water and now I can remotely monitor it. And so now a woman that wouldn't have necessarily gone into a career in marine because she didn't want to be on a ship, now she can sit at home and move the ship, leveraging technology. So there's just so many ways, but I think also the conversation around ethics and bias, and women tend to have a bit more focus on that. And that will be incredibly important for how AI rolls out, artificial intelligence in particular, but how that works, that rolls out going forward.
Yeah. And I just think too, like as you're speaking, almost too, like the awareness that there's roles out there for women, right? Like I don't even really know what's available. And so I'm curious your take, like what do you think are some of the biggest opportunities for women coming down the pipeline, you know, in the next, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, for example, when it comes to making an impact in tech and the digital space and everything we're talking about?
Yeah, so I'm smiling. So my daughter's doing a careers course at the moment. And this may not be the same all across Canada, but the careers that she's being exposed to are relatively traditional careers. And I had the opportunity, this was a few years ago, to talk to a group of high school students. I said, what do you want to be when you grow up? Policeman, social worker, firefighter, teacher, nurse. And those are all incredibly important. But I don't think anyone around that circle said, I want to be a software engineer, or I want to be a digital media person, or I want to. I think we really need to do a much better job to exposing to what the types of careers are going forward. I also think it's hard to predict today what some of those careers are going to look like. Like we didn't have, now you can be a prompt engineer. What's a prompt engineer? It's a person that can ask really good questions of an AI tool to be able to pull out information. And so I think it's really experimenting. What I find fascinating today is just, again, my daughter laughs at me, but one of the things that I really enjoyed about my master's program was this so much access to information, right? From YouTube videos to TED Talks to online courses from MIT to all of these different things. And I don't know what the jobs are, but what I can say is experiment and be curious. Take a little bit of time every day to just plug into something new. And then I think those paths will start to, because you'll figure out what you enjoy and what you don't enjoy and how those paths take you forward.
Yeah. You know, as you're speaking, I can tell you're really passionate about educating your daughter on this. And it's so funny because I was listening to something just yesterday, Dan Martell. I watched a YouTube clip and it popped up and he said, parents, he said, you are becoming the problem. He said, if you're not teaching your kids about AI because you don't know and you're uncomfortable with it and your mindset around it, you are doing your child such a disservice to be able to be successful in the world that's coming their way. Because it's coming, you know? And so I was watching that clip and I thought, that is so interesting. And so I'm curious what you would say to parents or your take would be on this. And I don't necessarily know how to ask the question yet. Like, I think parents are a part of the problem, not on purpose yet, because the generation of the young kids that is coming up are being parented by parents where this hasn't been something that we know about. So it's just not natural to talk about it in the household and to not only talk about it, but not be negative about it, to actually have positive, like, that's great that you're on your phone learning. That's awesome. You want to know AI. hey, like, you know, so what advice would you have for parents to open up that conversation and start to allow their kids to explore it and encourage it versus deter it?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And it's interesting because those parents are also leaders. And so that's actually translating into the workplace as well, as you've got this new tech-enabled, highly digital workforce that's coming in. And the leaders are not necessarily unleashing the power of that or getting in the way because of their concerns around the technology. And so I think this being curious and experimenting and understanding the power of what it can do, we have so much easy access. My daughter said to me yesterday, maybe it was even today, Mom, you're so addicted to ChatGPT, right? Because I test it for everything. It can give me a recipe in the kitchen and it can help me with speech writing and it can say what I should say to my husband in a particular situation. It just, and I don't necessarily use it for all those things, but I do like to experiment with what it can do. And that's just one tool now. There's so many different tools. There's now an online leadership coaching. So how can you provide coaching online? But I think parents need to play with it. They need to understand what their kids are trying to do. My daughter the other day wanted to scan in all of her clothes. And so my first reaction is don't be taking pictures in our house. She wanted to scan in all the clothes because this app can recommend fashion choices for her and what she should wear. And so what we try in-house is, yes, consume content, but I want you to create content. Learn how to create content because now you have to learn a skill and be able to put it together and understand the tools that are available. And so I think it's being encouraging, experimenting together, demonstrating that you're open to it is all really important.
Such good advice. And you know, you talked about how it also trickles obviously into the workplace. So for leaders like yourself that operate at such a high level, how do you continue to stay curious and open to evolution? And because that requires a lot of change and change management. Yet at the same time, I'm sure like you're probably put a certain system in place and then it changes. You know? Like, so how do you, and you're leading so many people at such a high level. So how do you stay open and curious yourself?
Yeah. So for me, it's always learning something new. So doing my master's was part of that, right? Reminding myself to, and coming into this new role was part of that as well. So I try to surround myself with people that I can learn from. And that gets harder and harder as you go through in your career because you tend to become the teacher, not necessarily the learner. But I find that's really important. And now that I'm done my master's, my two things now is one, Duolingo. So I was in Patagonia and I couldn't speak any Spanish. So now I'm testing a tool that helps you learn a language online, which I had never done before. I am playing with some of the new, when I hear about a new AI tool, I try to play with it. So whether it's imaging software, how does it draw dogs or how does it? So I know that it does a terrible job of drawing a basic house. Now it might do, this was 6 months ago, might do a great job now, but really just testing, constantly testing and playing with it and experimenting and challenging myself. If I want my team to do it, then I need to demonstrate that I'm curious too. Right. It's not just their job. It's also my job. We're in a world of transition. There's a lot of things happening in the world. How do you be open to change is flexibility, curiosity, and being willing to do things differently.
Yeah, for sure. And I think too, like you said, as a leader of an organization, as a CEO, yet also as a leader of a household, like a parent, right? So taking that on too as a parent, which isn't always easy to do, right? When teaching old dog new tricks. So I'm grateful you're out here spreading that message. It's awesome. Did you ever have a mentor, Kendra? Like, did you ever have somebody who took you under your wing and helped you open doors?
Yeah, I did. So I was very lucky, particularly in Montreal, that I had a couple of key people that I worked with that were incredibly supportive and helped me along my journey. They were both men, actually. I'm a big believer of women supporting women, but I also think that allyship and men, I get actually a bit frustrated when we do all these women in leadership events and it's all women that attend. It's a woman's problem to solve when I think the key is back to parenting. How do we get the fathers, right? How do we get the supporters more broadly? So I was very lucky that, and continue in my new role, I have a really amazing board that is very supportive in terms of being able to help and provide advice and encouragement. I haven't been great at, I would say, there's a formal, you meet your mentor every certain amount of time, and I haven't done it that way. I've probably just plugged into people that have been particularly helpful at different stages. So,
yeah,
but mentors are really important because they can ask you the hard questions. And I think a really good mentor will learn from you also because they recognize that you have the two-way street of conversation.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's such good advice. And I'm just thinking about your role as a mentor, obviously leading so many people, and you're helping others really implement innovation and technology at a high level. You've helped create a couple hundred companies and all of these jobs and everything. What have you seen, just for those who are listening and they're possibly running a business and they're wanting to start to implement innovation, what have you seen are some of the common themes of success for people to do that effectively?
Yeah, so I would say the number one thing is to be really focused on the problem and flexible on the solution. So what I see is a lot of organizations that say, in fact, I was in a conversation just yesterday, we need to implement an AI strategy. Okay, why? Everyone's doing it. Okay, yeah, everyone's doing it. But what is the problem that we're trying to solve? What is the business problem that we are actually trying to solve? There was a presenter who said, we knew we wanted to solve this problem. The technology wasn't there today, but we bet on it being there. By the time we were ready to solve the problem 3 or 4 years from now, the technology was going to catch up and we'd have the technology to solve the problem. So staying really focused on the problem and then being flexible to whatever the different alternatives are for the solution and the fact that they will evolve over time. So if there was one piece of advice, it would be absolutely that. I think the second one would be, you can't bring, this is the culture, eat strategy for breakfast. And so back to that comment that we had on leaders and parents, right? If you're not actually bought in and you're not actually demonstrating that to the entire organization and you're not building into your strategic conversation, I think a lot of organizations will hire the data scientist who's going to be responsible for dealing with the data problem. Or they're going to hire the innovation champion that's responsible for making innovation happen in the organization. In a lot of cases, they fail, even if they have a small little team, because they are bucking up against the culture of the rest of the organization. It's not super clear how they're meant to influence or fit in. The senior leadership's not necessarily paying attention day to day and making sure that you are really thinking about how do we, if we're going to be more innovative, if we're going to encourage change, how does that actually flow down from the leadership? And I think the third piece is room to fail. I am not very good. I gave my example, my assignment that I didn't do well on and how that sent me in a completely different direction. But how do you actually celebrate the learnings from the failures? And how do you create an environment where people can take risk and that they're not necessarily penalized for the fact that it doesn't work? So those would definitely be a few.
Those are awesome. It's like really creating an environment and a culture of willingness to learn, right? And for people to try new things, which I think is so important. And, you know, you talked a little bit about just it trickling down, but I'm also curious because you're really good at fostering collaboration. And I think that's such a unique skill set. What would you say when it comes to all of this you've learned about collaboration that you wished other leaders understood? Because I think it's a big piece of the puzzle in making all of this work.
Yeah, collaboration is a lot easier to say than it is to do. I would say that collaboration can be a bit like marriage, right? So you are bringing together different cultures and you're bringing together different perspectives. And so taking the time up front to be able to have those harder conversations is incredibly important. And so we see with our projects, because our projects have multiple companies working together, is they're frustrated in the beginning because it is slower, but then once they get it going, they can go much faster. I think you can go faster alone, but you can go farther together, that expression. Mm-hmm. So that's what we see, but you need to have the hard conversations about how are we sharing intellectual property? Who is paying for what? Who's going to get the return? How does the business model work? How are we going to share in the revenues? And so I think that the details is really important. I think, again, the culture, being comfortable with how the organizations work together. And the third one for me, because obviously I deal with lots of stakeholders from all over, is where are the wins? So where can we, I think sometimes we tend to get really caught up in what we don't have in common, right? And so our frustrations around what is not working. And so how do we stay focused on what are the things back to that? What are we trying to accomplish? What is the thing that we are trying to accomplish together? How do we stay focused on that thing? And then the rest aligns in behind. But once you have that breakdown of frustration, again, someone said to me, if you start your day assuming that the other person is not out to get you, start the day assuming that we all are working with the same intention of wanting to be successful and staying focused on what it is that we're trying to do, then the rest of the details work out, get better.
Oh my gosh. I love everything you're sharing. I feel like I could just talk to you about so many questions. We're going to have you back to talk about so all these things that I want to pick your brain about, because you're just, you juggle a lot of people and a lot of responsibilities, right? And so I'm curious actually with that, because I feel like the role you have requires probably systems and data and technology and like the people management, and it's, there's a lot of responsibility there. And so I'm curious for you personally, how do you stay connected to your why? And like, you know, you talked about you got into this role in the first place because you were searching for what you cared about. How do you stay connected to that with all of the noise that I'm sure you deal with on a regular basis?
Yeah, that's a great question. I should say, again, you commented on the 200 companies. So it's our startup project. I'm not in the details of all those 200. So I want to give a shout out to that project, which is doing great work in supporting those companies. I'm lucky with this role because I get to live the why, right? Because we are working to build the ocean economy, grow the ocean economy for Canada, grow Canada's economy. And it is connected also to planet and the future of life on Earth and every second breath we take. And there's just so much that I get to see and do every day that stays really connected to that. And you can feel that you're making a difference. The trick for me, however, within the organization is making sure that everyone else can also feel that connection, because we are a virtual team. Everyone is sitting in their individual houses and they're doing the claims, or they're trying to get steering committee information, or they're trying to produce a report for the government or whatever those things are. And you very quickly get caught into that administration. And so we've really tried to rethink when we bring people together, what is the type of content that we provide so people can see the projects that we're supporting and the solutions that we're developing and the difference that they can make in the world. And so that's been a bit of my focus. The second one is, because I get to live the why every day and the opportunity is so huge and the time feels so small, managing the balance is the team can somehow feel overwhelmed with how much there is to do. And we have to be able to disconnect from that and take time for ourselves and me as well to say, you know what, I'm doing all that I can do, but it can't have all of me.
I love that. You know, and also maybe this is a good question to ask before we learn a little bit more about where to find you and start to wrap up. What you just shared, I think, is so important. So, you know, you work globally around sustainability, right? That's a big part of your reason. How do you do that work-life balance? Like, how do you create sustainability for yourself? Do you have some tips for those who are listening? Because as entrepreneurs, as founders, as CEOs, I think this is the constant question. You know, how do we also give time and space and energy to our life outside of what we do for work?
Yeah, I adopted my daughter as a single mom. So that was a big work-life balance choice. And I remember my mother saying at the time, like, why would you ruin your career by going down and doing this thing? But it was incredibly important to me. So I think understanding what's important to you outside is really important. I actually took a course on how to set personal boundaries because I was terrible at it. So again, I was going to change my job so that I worked less, and I realized I was the problem. It didn't actually matter what job I did. I wasn't just going to work less because the job changed. I would rather be doing something that I love and figure out how to put some personal boundaries in than try to force it by doing a job I hated 8 hours a day. That just didn't seem like the right logical choice to me. And so it was very refreshing to say, I remember the first time I said, I'm going to go play tennis. And the people in the room said, well, you don't need to go play tennis. We have this thing to do. I'm like, no, it is 6 o'clock on Friday night. And I play tennis from 6 to 8. And that is how I go from my weekend to my weekend. Not these days, but at the time. And that is going to be a rock. And so I really like Stephen Covey talks about the, I think it's in 7 Habits of Highly Effective People is the one that it's in that talks about the rocks and the sand and the, and so I really try to look at what are the rocks, whether that is seeing my best friend or spending time with my husband or what I'm going to do with my daughter, or my mom has dementia. So she's a big rock at the moment as well. How do those fit in? And then making sure that I, not to say there's not always flex, but try to respect those things as much as possible.
I love it. I love the rock analogy. I use it a lot, right? Like put your rocks, if you don't schedule your rocks, they're just not going to happen. And so it's so important. Oh my gosh, Kendra, you're just awesome. I'm curious if people want to just learn more about you or follow you. And I have a feeling, you know, is a big part of the reason. So two things. Why are you doing podcasts? Are you wanting to spread the message right now? Is this why, like, to have more women just realize they can take up this space? And then where can we follow you so that we can be inspired and learn more and educate ourselves and just know what's available?
Yeah, so I think part of the reason for the podcast, so yes, very passionate about women in technology, but I think more broadly, women in leadership. A lot of what I hear from women is, I have an aging parent, so I can't, or I have young children, so I can't, or, and so we self-select out of leadership opportunities versus trying to figure out unique ways that work for us to be able to do both. And so that concerns me. Because I think we need, and we've seen during COVID, the importance of female leadership. We need both. We need all the perspectives at the table. And then for technology more specifically, we also need to make sure in this world that we're building that is increasingly automated, that we've got women's voices very strong in that place. And then in terms of finding me, LinkedIn is the best spot right now. I'm pretty easy to find on LinkedIn. I am hopefully working on a personal website that by the time you find me on LinkedIn in the next few weeks, I will have the website going as well, to try to share a little bit more deeply some of the things that I'm doing. Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, thank you. You know, you are such a leader and such a great example for women that you can, this is my belief, is you can have it all. The CEO of a very big organization and still finding time for the things that matter to you. So just thanks for being an example. It's really inspiring. And just what you're doing and taking on and the impact you're making in the world and in Canada. I think it's really cool to find other women leaders in Canada doing good things here. Super inspiring. I'm curious, is there anything else you want to add before I ask? I want to wrap up and just ask 3 last questions that I always do. But if there was anything else you wanted to share, did we miss something you just really wanted to make sure we talked about?
Maybe just to reinforce what you just said, I think that we get very focused on work-life balance and what work-life balance should look like. And I think it's a bit like when you're trying to build something new, everyone has an opinion. And this was probably one of my other learnings, especially because I decided to become a single mom. Everyone has an opinion on what you should do, what you shouldn't do, what work-life balance should look like. Oh, you need to be at that concert. You can't miss this. You can't. And so that noise can be incredibly stressful. And I don't think it's just for new female parents. I think it's for parents in general. So finding the balance that works for you and being able to define that and then being able to be confident in that and block out the noise is incredibly important to success, because otherwise I think it clicks everything. It clicks the imposter syndrome. It clicks the mommy guilt, which tends to be quite huge. And so being comfortable in that space and what works for you and being able to talk through that with your family and professionally and define it, I think is incredibly important to success.
Yeah, awesome advice. I'm glad you shared that and agreed. Agreed, right? Okay, so speaking of success, you know, you've had quite a few chapters in your life. I'm curious now, how would you define success for yourself nowadays?
Yeah, I think success for me now is to encourage leadership. So I think that for me is something that I am increasingly passionate about, whether that is leadership in terms of the ocean economy, whether that is leadership in terms of women in technology, but just I think we are in a moment where we really need leaders and leadership, and that's important for me. Also, focusing my time and energy, I'm trying to get better and better at, as I get older, making sure that I am using the time on those things where I can have most impact and that most matter to me. And I have never been very good at being choosy because it's always an opportunity and I can always learn something, but I am trying to get smarter around, maybe smarter is not the right word, choosier. Choosier is the right word to say, I'm going to take more of my time and effort on these fewer things.
Yeah. Awesome. I love it. Okay. My tagline to my podcast is Unleashing Greatness Within. What is three pieces of advice you would give someone to unleash their inner greatness?
So that's a great question. Find what you're passionate about. I think there's all kinds of expressions around follow your passion, you'll never work a day in your life. But I think really being able to find what you're passionate about is incredibly important. I think understanding your boundaries. So where are the things that you're willing to give and what are the things that you're not willing to give? And then I think another one is picking your partner, right? So whether you want to do it on your own or, like I said, I adopted as a single mother, but now I have a husband. And so he plays a pretty key role. And I'm trying to think if someone else who said the same thing, that actually matters, right? Is because you want someone that aligns to your passion and understands where your boundaries are. And that's incredibly important too.
Awesome. I love it. Okay, Kendra, last question. If we were going to give a call to action to the listeners today based on your message, they hop off this episode and they can go and implement one thing this week, what would your advice be? What can they go and implement?
Explore technology. The easiest is probably just get on and play with one of those AI tools and understand the power that it can unleash, but absolutely be curious about technology. That would be, I think, the overwhelming message from this conversation.
I love it. Exactly. Everybody get curious. I'm curious right now. I'm learning. I feel like such a rookie, yet it's just willing to feel like a beginner again, you know, and just get out there and be curious and take a look and play around with it. And that's the only way to learn and grow and understand. So Kendra, thank you so much for being here. It's just been such a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you. I'm excited for everything that you're doing. And I really love your message. So just thanks so much for today.
Oh, thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tanya and this is Julie, and we are the founders of Coach Corp, your all-in-one solution for building and scaling a successful coaching business.
At Coach Corp, we provide you with everything you need in one place. You can house your courses, manage memberships, run email campaigns, and create stunning websites and funnels, all with our easy-to-use platform.
And it's not just about the software. We offer built-in coaching and mentorship, helping you implement best practices from certified NLP practitioners and story brand coaches. And that's just scratching the surface of what's inside.
And that's why we're excited to sponsor the Entrepreneurial Elevation podcast with Kelly Beveridge. Kelly is a thought leader who inspires and elevates entrepreneurs worldwide.
We believe in the power of community and continuous learning, and this podcast is a fantastic resource for any coach looking to truly grow their practice.
So join us on this journey. Tune into the Entrepreneurial Elevation podcast for insights and inspiration, and visit Coach Corp to transform your coaching business today.
Coach Corp, your path to coaching success.